Thank you, sir. We'll be in the book of Judges tonight and encourage you to take your Bible and be turning there. We'll be going there in just a minute. So we've been going through this. I think I'm still a little scratchy. So we've been going through... Boy, what do you want me to try? You want me to try anything? Are we still getting the feedback? Yes, we are. Okay. Stories are pretty easy to tell. When we get to the time of the judges, though, it's a little bit harder for a short period like we have together to go through and to tell everything within that time period, and I won't try to do that this evening. But we do want to give some thoughts about what is happening in this time and as it relates to the story of God's people in the Old Testament. And what we've done and what we're trying to do is simply to give us a grasp of what is going on in the Old Testament story, to know how that fits in together. At any time we were dealing with any kind of topic, if someone mentions Deborah to you and you say, okay, well, I know where Deborah fits in and I know exactly how that fits into the history of God's people, you would be able to do that. Not that many of you don't already. But it's certainly just an easy type of lesson to give a feed or give an overview of that. So there are handouts in the back. I'd encourage you to get that. That just serves as a study guide for you to be able to go and to read through the text and to be able to look at those things on your own. Okay, I'm going to turn back. Did you change frequency or anything? Because I'm going to try this again, see if I can move around. Okay, how am I now? I think that's better. Okay, very good. Nope, not better. I can't stand back there all night. It's the only problem. Okay. So just bear with us. The time of the judges, when we come there, as we were leaving our last discussion, I'm just going to chuck it. Over the top, like that. That's not going to stay.
Here, you hold this.
All right, I'll hold that.
Let me have this.
Yeah, you help me out there.
That should hold still.
It's been a long day. It's been a really long day. Okay, you know what? Let's just start talking about the judges while we can. How we left off our last discussion. Of course, God has led his people, Abraham's family, that we began reading about in Genesis, and God making these promises. And they had developed into this great nation in Egypt, and God led them out by his mighty power. And yet, a people who turned away from God at every hand. And so God destroyed that generation in the wilderness. But a new generation arose, and God used Joshua to lead them into the land. And we saw how, in actually a series of quick battles, God gave them victory over the armies of the land, and God gave them the promised inheritance, as you can read there in Joshua 21, verses 43 through 45, that God had fulfilled his promise to them. God had given them control, complete control over the land. Now, I do want to go back, though, as we begin our discussion tonight in Judges, to something that God had said to this generation in Deuteronomy chapter 7 and verse 22. The Lord your God will clear away these nations before you little by little, and you'll not be able to put an end to them quickly, for the wild beasts would grow too numerous for you. So an indication here that while they would go into the land, God would give them the control of the land, they would be victorious over the major armies, yet there would still be people in the land after those military victories. And there were. And in fact, when you go through the book of Joshua, let me get on further. And after you see the conquest and what they have done, and you begin reading the early chapters of Judges, you kind of see that Israelite control over the land was more or less limited to these green areas. That is, that they had been victorious over these cities, driven out the inhabitants from these cities, but in all these other areas, there were still Canaanites living in the land. And how the book of Joshua begins is, you have Judges. Joshua had commissioned the people now to go to their inheritance, each tribe, and to drive out the inhabitants of the land, making the promise that God will be with you. God will drive these people out before you if you will but be faithful to God. And what you read in that first couple of chapters is time after time, the tribes of Israel did not do that. Very few times you have a partial conquest. Judah would go and take part of the land, and yet there were still Canaanites living in some of their cities. And so you have the people not going out and fulfilling what God had said they should do. And then you come to those words that you're familiar with when you come to Judges chapter 2. And after Joshua had died, you come to verse 10. That all that generation also were gathered to their fathers. And there arose another generation after them who did not know the Lord, nor yet the work which he had done for Israel. I don't know if we are to take from that that the previous generation had just utterly failed to talk about God to them. I kind of doubt that. But whatever the fault, wherever the fault lay, here was a generation who did not know the fundamentals of who God is, did not appreciate and recognize, as we were even talking about in Psalm 78 this morning, the saving power of God and the essential responsibility we have to follow and to keep our covenant with God. A generation arose that did not know the Lord, did not know what God had done for His people. And so what you find over and over in the book of Judges, and this is an old chart that I use, and I'll be honest with you, there's one thing that probably needs to be changed. You have this cycle that begins being told in verse 11 of chapter 2. And then the sons of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baals. You may wonder, why would Israel ever serve these images, these Baals, these Asherah? And there's no good reason. But when you live in an agricultural society and you've not driven out the inhabitants of the land, your livelihood is dependent on rain. Your livelihood is dependent on what will the ground produce. And of course, God is the one who had promised to His people, you follow me, you be faithful to me, you keep my covenant, I will give you all that you need. But as they had not driven out the inhabitants of the land, they began to hear about Baal, god of the storm, Asherah, god of the ground. And they began serving these other gods, praying to Baal, offering sacrifices to Baal, praying that Baal would rain down on the earth so that Asherah could produce. These were agricultural gods. And not to get into the details, but the heathen practices that went along with that and the fertility rites were things that no faithful person of God should have been involved in. So they began serving these other gods. And what happens, continues on in verse 12, they forsook the Lord, the God of their fathers, who had brought them out of the land of Egypt and followed other gods from among the gods of the people who were around them and bound themselves down to them. Thus they provoked the Lord to anger. So they forsook the Lord and served Baal and the Asherah. And the anger of the Lord burned against Israel, and He gave them into the hands of plunderers who plundered them, and He sold them into the hands of their enemies around them so they could no longer stand before their enemies. Here you have this cycle that's repeating over and over again, this book of a people that forsake their God. And God, because they have done this, God's protection is no longer with them. God's, the enemies of the people can come in and afflict the land. Now, if I were to make a change, the change would probably be on the third point, Israel's repentance. I don't know that I would go that far to actually say that Israel repented. Yes, there were times in this period where they were no longer serving the Asherahs and the Baals. But in fact, all the text says in verses 15 and 18, it talks about how the people were severely distressed in verse 15. And then in verse 18, it talks about how the Lord was moved to pity by their groaning because of those who oppressed and afflicted them. God raising up these judges was an act of God's mercy. clearly an act of God's mercy, of a people who did not deserve His mercy, as you see as you go throughout this text. This is a people who, on every hand, again, defied their God, turned against their God. They will cry out to God when they're afflicted, "Oh, deliver us," and God, because He is merciful, would deliver them. But then they would only turn away again. And so God would send a judge. He talks about that in verse 16, that God raised up judges who delivered them from the hands of those who plundered them. When we go through our traditional judge list, a lot of these judges weren't good people. I don't count Abimelech as a judge, even though Abimelech is said to have ruled over Israel for 3 years. He is not said to judge over Israel. Samson, perhaps the most famous of the judges, particularly when we're kids, we hear the stories of Samson, almost like this biblical Hercules. And for a young boy, Samson sounds awesome. Wow, this really strong guy who never cut his hair because, "Mom, I don't want to go to get a haircut anyway." And the Lord's with him. Samson's one of the most despicable figures in the Bible. But yet he's said to judge over Israel for 20 years. Gideon, as mighty as Gideon is, and we think of that anyway. When we begin the story of Gideon, Gideon is hiding in terror from the Midianites. He is threshing out the wheat in the wine vat, because he's afraid that the Midianites are going to come in and take away all the produce. He has very little faith in what God will do. And so you remember, if Gideon has to have all these signs brought out to him. And then, of course, Gideon and his 300 men will be victorious over the Midianites. And then what you read about Gideon at the end of that story, even though he demonstrates some faith in God, the people want to make Gideon king and make his sons king. And Gideon says, "No, I'll not rule over you. My sons will not rule over you. The Lord will rule over you." And then they give him some silver, and Gideon says, "Okay, now I'm going to make an ephod, and we're going to keep that around," and Israel began to use as an idol. So even one of these great heroes, we would think, of the book of Judges, not always doing exactly what you think God would want him to do. But God uses these men and women, uses them to deliver His people. But this just tells you, again, the book of Judges is not a book of heroes. It's a book of very dark time in Israelite history, where God will use a few people to deliver them from their oppressors because God has heard their cries and their groaning. And then there will be peace while the judge lives. Now, when you go through your judge list, the chronology may not fit exactly in how we think the Bible story goes. And I say that for this reason. You start adding up all the years that the judges judged, and you may have, that's a very long period of time that doesn't necessarily fit between when we think the Exodus happened and when King David and Solomon were reigning. When we look at some of these stories, you see that some of these judges may have been more localized than national leaders, if you will. So, for instance, the story of Jephthah, more of a localized story in Gilead than many of the other leaders. Samson is actually, his story happens in a very, very small area of the tribe of Dan and where the Philistines were. So they may have been even doing these works and God using them concurrently. So we come to the judges. And of course, we use first through chapters 1 through 7 of 1 Samuel because Eli and Samuel fit within there too. I'm not going to go through and tell you all the stories of the judges. Go back and read them, though. Go back and read them. But yes, it can give you encouragement because here are a few faithful people in the middle of so much wickedness and darkness. But that's not going to be the overall impression you leave with. You're not going to leave with an overall encouraging note from this book. You're going to leave with this idea of how far people have fallen and how quickly they have fallen away from their God. This truly is a generation that did not know the Lord and did not know what He had done for His people. Again, just kind of taking you through some of the stories, the first judge that is mentioned is Othniel. Othniel is of the tribe of Judah. He's a brother of Caleb, so he's relatively south in the kingdom of Israel. But the first oppression comes from the king of Mesopotamia to the far north. So that would indicate to you that even though this oppression is coming from the far north, Othniel, because he's from all the way in the south, that this oppression is afflicting or affecting most of the nation of Israel. And so that is where Othniel figures into the picture. The next battle, hey, and I'm sorry, it's not too clear on the one here in the front. If you look on the sides, you probably get a little bit better picture. Ehud. You're familiar with Ehud and Eglon. This is led by the Moabites. And the Moabites are crossing into Israel by the fords at Jericho. And they are oppressing the people. Well, Ehud is sent to bring tribute, to bring his gift to the king. And he is able to slay the king while he is there. And so 10,000 of the Moabites are slain. And again, so you see that now oppression is coming from a different area. Shamgar is next. He slays 600 Philistines with an ox... jawbone? Boy. Yeah, there we go. What was it? That's right. That's what I thought it was. See, it wasn't in the brain too well, though. But you get a picture here, though. Oppression's coming from everywhere. North, east, west. God is using these foreign people, these other people, to oppress His people because they have turned away from Him. Deborah is a story that more of us are familiar with. Deborah was a prophetess in the tribe of Ephraim. But now it is a Canaanite king, Hazor, the king of Hazor, Jabin. And he has 900 iron chariots. Quite the technological marvel of that time. A war machine. And he is oppressing the people. His commander of the army is Sisera, and they are both feared. Well, Deborah is commissioned to deliver the people, if you will, or at least to deliver a message. She sends to Barak, who is of the tribe of Naphtali. The tribe of Naphtali, if you'll look up here, is in this region, so much closer to the region to where this oppression was coming. And so Deborah sends to Barak and says, God is going to use you to defeat Jabin, king of Hazor, and Sisera. And Barak says, only if you'll go with me. And of course, Deborah says that, yes, I will go with you, but the honor will go to a woman. And that's exactly what happens. The battle occurred in the region of Mount Tabor. And there, Barak and the 10,000 of Israel, I believe it was 10,000, are successful in defeating Jabin, king of Hazor. Sisera flees, and he is killed by a woman in a tent as he has sought rest. And you know what? I won't tell you how he dies because I don't want to have parents tell me, you know what? We'd rather tell our kids that story on our own. So anyway, another oppression. The next story is of Gideon. Gideon is of the tribe of Manasseh. And the oppression comes from the Midianites and the Amalekites. The Midianites and the Amalekites are from this region, so they are overrunning much of the land. And there, the battle will happen in the Valley of Jezreel. The Valley of Jezreel was one of the most resplendent areas in all of Palestine. It was the breadbasket of the region. So you can imagine why these Midianites living out in the wilderness and they're invading the land and they're taking all the goods and the produce. And again, Gideon's that figure that we think of, this hero, and yet Gideon is struggling with faith. Struggling with, where is this God who we've heard about from our forefathers? Why are we being so afflicted? And yet ultimately a man who will have enough faith in God as he summons his army of 32,000 men, and God says to him, send back home anyone who's afraid. 22,000 are sent back home, leaving him with 10. And then God gives him a further test, okay? Have everybody drink. The one who kneels and bring the water to his hand, you keep him. The one who bend down to drink water out of the brook, you'll send them home. So 300 men. 300 men that surround an army of 135,000 in the middle of the night with torches and jars, breaking the jars, shining the torches, and routing the people, not by their own power and might, but by what God has done. But then again, even in that story, you have Gideon as he is pursuing the enemy. And you have two cities, Succoth and Penuel, who refuse to give him aid. And so now Gideon, leader of Israel's armies, goes back to these Israelite cities and punishes them. These are dark times in the people. Next story is about Abimelech. Abimelech was a son of Gideon. And when in the paper, what I have is his enemies, the enemy was Israel itself. The whole story of Abimelech is of, here's Abimelech, he slays his 70 brothers so that he can be made king of Shechem. And then Shechem ultimately turns against him, and so you have this horrible, horrible story of Abimelech bringing wrath upon Shechem and destroying the inhabitants of that city, and then Abimelech being destroyed himself. Horrible, horrible story. You know the story of Jephthah. Paul sent me a text message yesterday. Wasn't it yesterday? Paul, what was the text message? Paul said, I'm reading Judges. I get to the story of Jephthah. What's that about? More or less was the question. My response to Paul was, just know, in the time of the Judges, everything was messed up. It was. Here is Jephthah. He, another one of these figures. He was rejected by his brothers because he had a checkered past. He was born of a harlot. But the people of Gilead say, we need you to lead us. So they make Jephthah their ruler. Jephthah makes this vow, God, if you will grant me victory, then the first thing that comes out of my house, I'll sacrifice to you as a burnt offering. And he goes, and he is victorious. And as you know, it's his daughter who is the first to come out of his house and to greet him. And the question becomes, well, was this what God was looking for? Absolutely not. Did God cause her to come out of the house? Absolutely not. What do you have here? You have a rash man who, while he's professing God, I need your help, but he's doing so in a way that God never asked. God never said, okay, do this, and the first thing out of your house, you've got to sacrifice to me. Some ask the question, did he offer his daughters a burnt offering? My simple reading of the text probably indicates he may have. Why? Why would he do that? Did God want this? Absolutely not. And then Jephthah and the tribe of Ephraim will be at war with each other. Because Ephraim will say, why did you not call us out to the battle? And Jephthah will say, well, I did, and you didn't respond. And so now more of God's people are destroyed. And the story of Samson. Again, I won't go into the story of Samson. Samson's battles are all personal vendettas. Slights that have happened in the life of Samson. So Samson using his brute strength to slay Philistines. And ultimately, in what may be the only godly encounter that Samson has, is he has had his eyes put out and he's made a slave in the temple of the Philistines. And his hands are resting upon those two pillars. And he prays that God would give him the strength to slay his enemies that put his eyes out. And even then, I'm not sure how much godliness Samson had in his mind. But God used him. And that's the judges that are listed in the book of Judges. Again, Samuel lists two more. Eli, who's a priest, who's said to have judged Israel. And then Samuel himself. And the action there takes place in the tribe, in the territory of Ephraim. And you'll know this in the days of Eli, that the Philistines are oppressing them. And they're being routed in their battle. So they say, well, let's send out the Ark of the Covenant. And the Ark is taken. And history even says that Shiloh, where the Ark had once rested, and you may remember from Psalm 78 where God said, I've rejected Shiloh. Shiloh was destroyed at that time. Dark days. Terrible days. We think of the book of Judges as these figures, almost these heroes who, yes, these heroes who by their faith in God do wonderful things. And I'm not saying there aren't heroes in the book of Judges. Deborah, Gideon, at least part of his life, Othniel and Ehud, yes, people of faith. But when you come to the ending chapters of Judges, it may be that all this was just to prepare you for what is said several times in the closing chapters. I'll go to chapter 17, Judges chapter 17, and verse 6. In those days there was no king in Israel. Every man did what was right in his own eyes. Chapter 18, verse 1. In those days there was no king in Israel. Chapter 19, verse 1. Now it came about in those days when there was no king in Israel. Chapter 21, and verse 25. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. Well, that's the case throughout this book. As we know, even as Gideon himself had said, I'm not going to rule over you. My sons are not going to rule over you. It is the Lord who should rule over you. And what these statements make clear is that you have a people that is not recognizing the fundamental right that God had to rule over them. They're a generation who did not know the Lord, nor what He had done for His people. And so chapter 17 through 21, if the prior chapters had not been bad enough, it just gets worse. Chapter 17, you have this man of Ephraim who thinks, you know what? I'm going to make an idol, and I'm going to appoint my son to be a priest to my idol. And then he finds a Levite who he can make a priest instead. And so he has this kind of household temple that we're going to worship Jehovah God with this idol that I've made. In the 18th chapter, you have the whole tribe of Dan, because they've not been faithful enough to God to take their land. They have to go to the far north to try and take a city there where they can live. And they happen to go by Micah's house, and they say, hey, we kind of like that Levite and that idol. We're going to take them with us. A whole tribe of God's people. And then chapters 19 through 21 is just one of the most horrific accounts ever found. I won't go through the details, but it is a story of terrible atrocities being committed. It is a story of brothers warring against each other, slaying each other, a whole tribe of Israel, a whole tribe almost being destroyed, the tribe of Benjamin. There are critics of the Bible who point to stories like that. Charles Dawkins would be one in his book, The God Delusion. We talk about those stories and of all these atrocities and say that this is a God who approves of these things, and I would say they've missed the whole point. These stories are not found there because God approves of the behavior. These stories are found there because this is what happens to a society that fails to recognize its true king. These stories are there. And we ought to read them and know them. Because we're seeing the same thing happen among us. Of a world that has forgotten that God reigns. Of a world that does not know the Lord, nor what God does for His people. It's no wonder that the newspapers and the television and the internet is filled with horrific atrocity after horrific atrocity. That we live in a time when even when you go to the book of Judges and you're just struggling sometimes to find a few people of faith. And we're living in a world where sometimes it seems such a struggle to find a few people of faith who will put their faith and trust in God and follow after Him. The book of Judges is a hard study. It is not pleasant. But it doesn't mean it shouldn't be studied. Again, if history is to be learned from, then this divine biblical history should be learned from. We ought to look to it as God's people, recognize that it is possible for God's people to forget who their king is. And here's what happens. Not only societally, but individually. Here's what can happen to me as an individual when I fail to recognize God is my king. And watch out for what may happen next. You do not know what you might go off into, how bad life can be. And yes, even suffering the divine wrath of God in this life, not that God is there and holding the whip to you, but the idea that now that you're removed from God, and you're removed from godliness, and hear all the terrible things that happen of a life not lived in the presence of God. It's a cautionary tale. However, I will end on an upbeat note. For Ruth also figures into this time period. It's a separate book, but in the opening chapter, you say that you have this during this time of the judges. Now, Ruth tells a touching tale. Here is Naomi. She and her husband have moved. I'm sorry, she and her sons have gone into Moab. Her sons have married Moabite women, and her sons both die. Well, Ruth is her daughter-in-law, and Ruth will tell Naomi that her heart is knit to her heart. She will go wherever Naomi goes. Naomi goes back to her homeland. And the short end of the story is there is a kind of a touching love story of Ruth and Boaz, and they are married. Kind of a happy story. Wonderful story of Ruth and her affection for her mother-in-law and her willingness to do anything for her mother-in-law. But that's not the real point of the book. And I know I just probably gave the worst telling of the book in history. That's not the real point of the book. Go to chapter 4. Begin reading in verse 13. So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife, and he went into her. And the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. Then the woman said to Naomi, "Blessed is the Lord who has not left you without a redeemer today. And may his name become famous in Israel. May he also be to you a restorer of life and sustainer of your old age, for your daughter-in-law who loves you and is better to you than seven sons has given birth to him." Then Naomi took the child and laid him in her lap and became his nurse. The neighbor women gave him a name, saying, "A son has been born to Naomi." So they named him Obed. He is the father of Jesse, the father of David. Now, of course, when we think of the big picture of the Bible, we also know that would mean that Ruth, this Moabite woman, even as we noted in the story of the conquest, Rahab, a Canaanite woman, woman of Jericho, figuring into the lineage of Jesus. Now Ruth, a Moabite woman, we understand from this passage and also in Matthew chapter 1, also figures in the lineage of Jesus. In one of Israel's darkest moments, a moment of hope. A moment of hope, a Moabite woman, a faithful child of Israel, become married and have a child. David, the great king, would come from that child. And ultimately, Jesus, the greatest of all kings, would come from that child. Even in dark days, God still has a plan. God still has a way that His will, the restoration of His people, would come about. And that's the point for today, too. Dark days, very dark days. God still has a plan. God's plan will still be accomplished. The king came once. The king will come again. And so the invitation we'd offer you tonight is be saved from such dark days. Terrible, perilous times in which we live. Times in which most people do not know the Lord, do not know God. And yet God is still there. God is still reigning, even though we may not recognize His reign. And He is still going to deliver His people. The king is going to come again. Be saved from these perilous dark times. Put your faith in Him. Be baptized to have your sins forgiven. Be ushered into the kingdom of His Son. And if we can aid you in some way, we invite you to come as we stand and as we sing.
For cleansing in Thy precious blood that flowed on Calvary, I am coming, Lord, coming now to Thee. Wash me, cleanse me in the blood that flowed Calvary. Though coming weak and vile, Thou dost my strength assure. Thou dost my vileness fully cleanse, till spotless all and pure.